Chapter 32, Colombia. Gary, a British guy with a big beard and big curly hair, was waiting in the lobby of the hostel for me. He was living in Brazil, training jiu-jitsu, but was tired of the rainy season, so I'd come up to Colombia to stay in Medellin for a while and learn Spanish. Carlos took us around the city for sightseeing. He told us how the city was known for one thing in particular. When girls are in their teens, instead of traveling, they spend all their money on plastic surgery, giving the city its name as the Silicon Valley. Looking around, I could tell he was right. Even the grandmothers dressed like they were 19 and single. A cable car with panoramic windows was running all the way up the hillside around the city. All the poor areas were located high up on the steep hills, and it was almost surreal to slowly fly right over the little streets. We were only a few meters above the roofs of the houses and could see everything that went on beneath us in the vast favelas. Boys were fighting over a basketball game, school kids were riding bicycles, women were cooking and washing clothes, and men were hanging out on the street corners. As we got higher, we could feel the pressure in our ears. The view of the city drenched in sunlight was breathtaking. Carlos said it was his first time in a cable car too, and he felt like a gringo being on a sightseeing tour. Back at the train station down in the city, we stood on the platform and waited for the train. Three American girls all had big expensive cameras hanging around their necks. We all agreed that there was about a 90% chance that they were getting robbed before the day was over. I took my phone from my pocket to write a note about it for the book, thinking to myself that I wasn't much better showing off my phone like that. 2 minutes later, as we stood on the train, I realized that my phone was gone. A few moments of confusion and disappointment were replaced with a kind of strange calmness. Before I left for the trip, I thought a lot about what things would inevitably happen to me. Food poisoning, injuries, getting sick, skin infections, theft, and probably getting into a fight. It was all things I imagined would come my way sooner or later during the trip. The food poisoning had already hit me in Borneo, so that was off the list, I hope. Now someone had stolen something from me. I was waiting for it to happen to me, so when it did, it was no surprise. There was nothing I could do about it but accept it right on the spot. It was part of my experience. A necessary lesson in life to learn how to conquer and handle the emotions that come along with it. Someone was probably going to be happy with their new phone. Someone who probably needed it more than me. I lost a few notes for the book, but remembered most of it later. Other than that, I only lost the usual naked photos of myself taking in the bathroom mirror. They might be available online one day for a small monthly fee. We dropped by the hostel to pick up my gi and then drove to the gym. It was a small place where Carlos's wife was teaching dance lessons. Upstairs, a mix of different types of grappling mats were laid out over the floor. A corkboard on the wall had a few notes posted alongside a handful of medals. About 15 guys were sitting around on the mat, warming up and waiting for the class to start. Carlos introduced me to a few of them. He had originally trained in Panama and then moved to Colombia to try and start jiu-jitsu up there. Before he came, there was no training in the country. Now he was riding buses all around the place to teach in multiple training groups he had set up. For a small gym that had almost just begun training, the level was high. Carlos was a brown belt, and there were a few blue belts on the mat too who had good game. Gary was a strong blue belt with a really powerful game that took a lot of concentration for me to handle. My skinny body had little strength left, so I was relying more and more on my AK moves that I was practicing on the trip. To have a very deep understanding of a few moves like that is really helpful in sparring with stronger or better guys. Outside the gym, a small place that looked like a bar, cafe, restaurant, and convenience store combination had set up a big screen on the sidewalk playing music videos from YouTube in really bad quality. The low bitrate sound was blasting out through a small set of laptop speakers and people seemed to be getting in the mood for Saturday night. Medellin was a party town and I was staying in a party hostel. The common room in the lobby was full of people in the evenings, bussing around the pool table and small bar. I really enjoyed hanging out with fellow travelers for a change. They were all eager to socialize and it was nice to talk about traveling and share stories with people coming from so many places around the world. I had a crazy night out that Saturday. A tube of superglue I had used to fix basically everything on my trip had been in my pocket when Gary and I left the hostel together with a group of other guests. In the beginning of the evening, it was annoying to carry around, but as the evening unfolded, it suddenly seemed like the greatest thing ever to have with us. We had a long night of combined rum and superglue adventure until I finally hit my bed early morning around 7. It was only about 3 hours later, at 10 in the morning, that I woke up to the sound of someone playing guitar in the room next door. The song sounded really good the first 5 times it was repeated. At 20, it drove me nuts and I had to get up. Sitting up in the bed, I felt my head spinning. As I attempted to position myself to get down from the bunk, I realized that bringing the superglue out the night before might not have been such a good idea anyways. Chunks of glue, hard as concrete, were all over my arm. A few round spots on my left arm had hair missing, and 4 or 5 corns were still well stuck in the same area. On my right shoulder, a shot glass and a straw had survived the night. I couldn't find the mental energy to try and rip it off at that point. All I could think about was to brush my teeth and get outside for some fresh air. The room smelled funky, and despite three other people sleeping in there, it was probably mostly my manly odor that dominated the air. Stumbling to the rooftop to sit in the pool, my roommates, a New Yorker guy and two Danish girls, had beaten me to it. They laughed at me as I came up the stairs, looking filthier than ever. Just 3 hours of sleep hadn't done anything good for my looks that morning. I couldn't even answer them as they said good morning, but walked directly into the pool and cut straight to the chase, desperately commanding that one of the girls should go get us all pizza and mandarin juice. The girls were traveling on a tight budget, driving buses around South America for 4 months. I knew they would never say no to free pizza, and I totally took advantage of it. I had spent a bit too much money myself, but at that point my urge for fast food and mandarin juice was at extreme levels compared to my urge of calculating my budget. Laura was on the mission right away with a handful of my curled notes in her pockets. The pizza and juice was a very short fix for my hangover and only made me feel better for about 10 minutes. I needed to get some more sleep and was about to go downstairs and look for my earplugs as Gary called. He sounded surprisingly fresh and wanted to know both whether I was coming with him to a pool party on the top of a hotel and also if I knew why he had coins and a drinks menu superglued to his shoulder. I told him he had to be absolutely mad. There was no way I was going to go anywhere that day. He laughed and hung up. I battled with my second slice of pizza. Melted cheese had seemed like such a good idea, but now when I finally sat with it in my hand and the hot sun was hitting my buzzing head, it wasn't everything I dreamed of. Instead, I just felt slightly dirtied by it. The phone rang again. It was Gary. He said he didn't care how tired I was. I had to come to the party, trying to convince me that I didn't want to miss out on it. There was nothing in the world I could think of that I wanted less than party and melted cheese at that point. I'd only slept for 3 hours and could barely keep my eyes open. I wasn't going anywhere. Gary insisted and refused to hang out before I'd promised him to come. In any other situation than this, where I was traveling the world and had promised myself to pursue every single opportunity for adventure, there was no chance I would let him convince me. I knew it was crazy to say yes, but I had to. I had no plans the next day, no work responsibilities, no training I had to do, no classes to teach, no competitions to prepare for. I was responsible for myself and no one else, and I was free to make any decision I wanted, including going to a party after just 3 hours of sleep. I had become too old and sensible. When else would I do something like that in my life? Apparently, we had dropped into some super fancy party for the young, beautiful, rich, and famous. With my circled eyes, wife beater, and a dirty jiggy jig hat, I definitely didn't live up to the dress code, and really had no idea why they would let me in. Gary was sitting in a chair by the pool, waving at me with a big smile and a bottle of rum in his hand as I came out the elevator on the rooftop of the skyscraper hotel. It was a really cool place in three open floors. The lower floor had a long bar and a glass wall to the pool on the middle floor. All floors had panoramic views over the whole city through big glass walls. A DJ played under the top floor, and even though it was only around noon, the place was full of people in their most fancy swimsuits and expensive sunglasses. Gary had picked up right where he'd left when he went to bed only a few hours earlier. The amount of times in my life where I had woken up with a hangover and then went straight to the next party could be counted on very, very few fingers. But I was on the vacation of my life, so I thought to myself, why not? Within a very short time, we had all forgotten about the hangover and lack of sleep. The organizers gave everyone multicolored shutter shades, foam cans, and water cannons. Combined with the sunshine, music, and people throwing each other in the pool, it was one of the funniest parties I've ever been to. A guy dressed in all white who looked like a classic Cuban golfer invited us to come visit his family's house in the countryside. I was leaving the next day, but it would have been cool to see somewhere other than the city. Gary shouted to me through the crowd to get another bottle of rum. Wearing plastic sandals, it was really slippery by the bar because of the water that had splashed onto the floor from the pool. As I walked past it, I paid more attention to the girls in bikinis swimming behind the glass wall than my feet, resulting in an epic slip where my feet went straight into the air and I landed with my tailbone right on the hard tile floor. It was a beautiful self-throw that must have scored a lot of points in most wrestling rule sets. Over the course of a few hours, several guys from the hostel had shared bottles of rum with us at a table, and the mood was high. Suddenly, everything seemed to change from one moment to another. As I stood by the bar, a really angry guy approached me along with a waiter, claiming that I had broken his bottle of vodka and that I owed him $100 for it. The waiter seemed a bit pissed off too, demanding that I would pay the bill for our table as well, probably thinking that we were trying to run away from it. He looked at me with very firm eyes, staring right at me, not blinking at all. The guy was furious. In a matter of seconds, I felt very sober again. I had no idea if I had broken a bottle or not. I could have. More likely did it seem that he was just looking for someone to blame, and really standing out from the crowd, I was an easy target. Apart from my early experiment of putting myself inside of a cage in front of a crowd, I had only been in one fight in my entire life, and it wasn't even a real one. It was more of a late evening clinch and neon belly demonstration on a drunken guy in a supermarket who attacked the teenage girls working there. I had no interest in getting a second fight on my unofficial record, and especially not that far away from home. I suddenly felt very unwelcome at the party. The waiter called over the security guys, and I could understand he told them that I was not allowed to leave before I had paid. A few of the angry guy's friends had also showed up, and they had all cornered me with my back up against the bar. I told them that I didn't notice breaking anything, but I also didn't want any kind of trouble, so I just paid for it. I only had about $50 in my pocket, so there was no way I could pay everything myself. The waiter presented me with the bill for our table and had added an expensive bottle of vodka to it. I knew they were setting me up, but there was nothing I could do about it. I had to get to the other guy so we could all pay it together, I told the waiter. It was obvious that they wouldn't let me go anywhere, not even to the pool to look for my friends. Mike, one of the guys from the hostel, walked by and noticed that something didn't look quite right. I told him about my slightly uncomfortable situation, and he told me he'd go get everyone right away to get things sorted. I felt like he was gone forever, as the guys got more and more angry. I tried to just smile and be friendly, telling them that there was nothing I could do before I found the other guys. He came back with none of the other guys. They had all disappeared, and we stood there alone with the bill. He tried to pay with his credit card, but it didn't work for some reason, and that didn't make my newly found friends any happier. They wouldn't even let me go to the bathroom anymore. It was a long wait at the bar, trying to fence off the angry guys and waiters while Mike ran off to get some money. The funniest party had just turned into a nightmare, and all I wanted was to get away. I wrote a text message to Carlos, telling him that I was maybe in some sort of trouble and I might be in need of his help. Mike was breathing heavily and excused himself for taking so long as he finally came out of the elevator. He had run all the way to the hostel to get money and had to go by a bank first to exchange it. It was a relief when he paid the bill. I tried to shake the hand of the guy whose bottle he said I broke, but he wasn't interested. Mike and I agreed that it was probably for the best that we called it a night and left the party at that point. We stumbled over the slippery floor to the elevator to escape before anything happened. I was planning to leave the next day and preferred it to be in an airplane instead of a coffin. We all laughed as we came out of the hotel, still with our hearts pumping all the way up in our throats. Down on the street, Carlos parked his car like in the end of an action movie car chase and jumped out with desperation in his eyes. He dropped everything when I texted him and raced through the city to come help. Needless to say, he was confused as I strolled down the streets with Mike, laughing at the whole situation. I told him the story, and he said he was glad to hear that I made it out of there. Apart from having things stolen, getting picked for a fight would probably be hard to avoid, partying everywhere in the world, often standing out in the crowd. Fortunately, it wasn't that day. I could cross that experience off my list, and I was pleased to find out that in case anything happened, friends around me were ready to help out right away. At least some of them. I still hadn't found Gary or any of the other guys from the party who were supposed to share that bill with me. It annoyed me that they were nowhere to be found when it was time to pay up, but I would talk to them about it the next day, especially Gary, who had seemed like a real friend. He had totally disappeared and was of no help when I was in trouble. The next morning, I was looking at plane tickets and trying to figure out where to go. I wanted to leave the same day, but the flights around South America were all really expensive and I was running low on money. I considered going to Argentina, Peru, or Chile before Brazil, but I couldn't find the right tickets. I even thought of doing a trip down to the Antarctic, as I realized that, after I had gotten to South America, it was the only continent in the world I hadn't put my foot on yet. I flickered through my emails, trying to find some ideas of where to go next. One guy had invited me to Ecuador. I had never thought of visiting that place, but he sold it really well. I looked through the travel sites, and within minutes, I had found a reasonably priced ticket the same day to Guayaquil in Ecuador, and from there, on to Rio de Janeiro a week later. Argentina was another option, but it was too cold at that time of year, it seemed. I had big plans of traveling around South America, but it was just too expensive for my budget at that time. At least I would get to see Ecuador before spending 2 weeks in Brazil. I got a confirmation email of my booking. I was leaving the same evening and would stay there for a week. I remembered that a few days earlier, I had gotten another email from a guy called Juan Miguel in Guayaquil. I emailed him right away and he replied after just a few minutes, saying that I could stay with him and he would pick me up at the airport. And so it was determined that I would go to Ecuador. I was excited to explore another unknown place and spent the rest of the morning researching what to do there. One of the guys in the hammock next to me woke up and grunted a bit. I didn't pay attention to him. There were so many disgustingly hungover people in the hostel that day, myself included. He was moving around a little bit before suddenly he jumped out of the hammock and stood up. I turned my head and realized that it was Gary. He had been sleeping right next to me in the hammock for 2 hours and I hadn't noticed at all. During that time, I had called him several times and been annoyed that he didn't pick up. Christian, holy shit, what happened? I woke up in some gay guy's house and what the fuck am I doing here in your hostel? Gary shouted with the most desperate and confused look I'd seen on someone's face in my entire life. He gasped for air and looked like absolute trash as he stood there. The hammock had pressed into his face, leaving behind a checkered pattern all over his chin and forehead. His white tank top had stains of rum and burger sauce on it. He could barely stand on his feet and had no memory of what happened after I lost him at the party. The only thing he remembered was that he woke up in a bed in an apartment he had never been in before. Confused, he got up and realized that the only other person in the place was a very gay guy who apparently lived there. In desperation, he ran out of the place, leaving his phone behind. Somehow he ended up passing out in a hammock in my hostel, instead of his own apartment right around the corner. He told me the story with such desperation in his eyes, and I almost fell down my chair laughing. It was the craziest hangover wake-up I had ever witnessed, and the perfect ending to my flash visit in Colombia.